Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Next Level. My name is Rob. I'm one of the pastors here. Very excited for you to be here today because today we're concluding our series, Movies, Modern Day Parables. And if this is your first time here, you can catch up on the series by checking out our podcast. It's at our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or you can find it on iTunes, and you can listen to all of our series, and all the sermons are on there as well. If this is your first week, what you need to know is that I absolutely love movies. I am incredibly passionate about movies, and my love for movies comes from my dad. Some of my earliest memories in life are him taking us kids to the movie theater. I remember being 4 years old and being scared to death at Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I had to leave the theater because when the witch turns, you know when she turns in, like the queen turns into the witch, it scared me so bad. I remember standing in the lobby sobbing and crying, afraid I was going to have nightmares. I remember being a kid and seeing Return of the Jedi in the theaters, and my mind was blown. It was an incredible experience. We have a tradition where every Thanksgiving and every Christmas after the holiday festivities, we go to the movie theater. Like, that's what our family does. And one of the things that I've loved is that my dad shared his love of movies with me. And not only does he have a love for movies, but he has a love to be in movies. It's been his dream to be an actor, and for years he's been actually fulfilling that dream. And if you don't know my dad yet or don't know him, he's not here today, so I want to brag on him a little bit. My dad is doing something that I think is very inspiring for me as his son, that my dad is not just sitting around in retirement, he's actually pursuing his dream to be an actor, and he's actually made it into some movies and into some commercials. He even has his own IMDb page. I don't know if you're familiar with IMDb, but he has his own page where you can look him up on there. Robert Shepard, there he is on there. And you can check out some of the things he is. If you look at the bottom when you go to that page, you'll say he is known for some of the movies he's been in. He played Lincoln's doctor in Steven Spielberg's Lincoln. And spoiler alert, Lincoln dies. I don't know if you know that or not. But after his death, my dad is the one that pronounces him dead in the movie Lincoln. So my dad got to fulfill a lifelong dream of meeting Steven Spielberg, which was pretty cool. My dad also sat right next to, for 3 hours, Steve Carell while they were filming Evan Almighty, and they couldn't get everything right on the set, and so like for 3 hours, he sat next to Steve Carell, and Steve Carell talked to him. My dad's worked in films with Harrison Ford. He stood right next to him multiple times, and I was so mad at my dad. My dad stood right next to Harrison Ford in a funeral scene in Clear and Present Danger, and my dad did not talk to Harrison Ford because he said it was unprofessional. And I was like, Dad, I don't care. When you stand next to to Han Solo, you talk to him. Like, you figure out a way to talk to him. Like, so I was so frustrated. But my dad has done that, and he's instilled in us kids this love for movies. And what we found in this series is that movies are more than just entertainment. Movies are modern day parables. And a parable is simply a story with a point. And when Jesus was on the scene, when Jesus lived here 2,000 some years ago, whenever he taught the masses, whenever he taught a crowd, he taught them in parables. He would tell them stories, and his stories always had a point. And so in this series, we've looked at some movies that are some modern day parables. We started off week one with The Dark Knight, and we found that The Dark Knight's not just about Batman. It is a movie that is essentially about integrity, and that your integrity matters, and you practice your integrity along the way. In week two, we looked at a parable called The Karate Kid, one of my all-time favorite movies. And in The Karate Kid, we learned that we all need a Mr. Miyagi. If you want to learn how to make wise choices, you need someone that's wiser in your life, someone that can someone that can tell you exactly what to do. If you weren't here, make sure you listen to that one. And then last week, we looked at a little film called Philomena, and we looked at the fact that that was a parable that was about forgiveness. It was a hard story. It was a difficult story. It's a difficult movie to watch, but ultimately, it is a parable about forgiveness. And today, we're going to look at an unlikely parable. It is not a Christian film by any means. None of the films we've looked at have really been Christian films, but this is a film that you wouldn't look to get some spiritual guidance, but I think there is a spiritual point in this movie, whether they meant to or not. This is a film that came out in 2004, and as soon as it came out, it was considered to be a classic, especially in the teen genre of films. The film is rated PG-13, and in rewatching it and finding clips for this, it earned its PG-13 rating. So There's definitely a few sketchy scenes in the movie, but the movie is a movie that probably a lot of you have seen or at least heard of. The movie today is Mean Girls. Anyone seen Mean Girls? Okay. A lot of female hands went up and a lot of people under 30. Just I don't know what that means. Well, today we're going to look at the story of Mean Girls. And if you haven't seen the film, Mean Girls is written by Tina Fey, who's SNL alum, Saturday Night Live alum, and it's based off a book, which is based off a true story. And the movie tells the story of Katie, who her parents lived in Africa. They were zoologists and studied animals. They were not there because of religious reasons or because they were missionaries, but they were in Africa. And so her upbringing was in Africa, but her mom gets a job back in the States. And so for her junior year of high school, Katie has to move back to America and dive into the wild zoo known as public schools. And she dives into these schools, and she quickly learns that the rules that the students and the teenagers play by are different than the rules that she grew up with. The standards and the things that they do are way different than what she learned, and that sets up our first scene for the day. Check it out.
Having lunch with the Plastics was like leaving the actual world and entering Girl World. And Girl World had a lot of rules.
You can't wear a tank top 2 days in a row, and you can only wear your hair in a ponytail once a week. So I guess you pick today. Oh, and we only wear jeans or track pants on Fridays. Now, if you break any of these rules, you can't sit with us at lunch. Well, I mean, not just you, like, any of us. Okay, like, if I was wearing jeans today, I would be sitting over there with the art freaks. Oh, and we always vote before we ask someone to eat lunch with us, because you have to be considerate of the rest of the group. Well, I mean, you wouldn't buy a skirt without asking your friends first if it looks good on you.
I wouldn't?
Right. Oh, and it's the same with guys. Like, you may think you like someone, but you could be wrong.
120 calories and 48 calories from fat. What percent is that?
48 into 120?
I'm only eating foods with less than 30% calories from fat.
It's 40%. Oh, 48 over 120 equals X over 100, and then you cross-multiply and get the value of X.
Whatever. I'm getting cheese fries.
Have you seen any guys that you think you're cute yet?
Well, there's this guy in my calculus class.
Who is it? It's a senior.
His name's Aaron Samuels.
No. Oh, no, you can't like Aaron Samuels. That's Regina's ex-boyfriend.
They went out for a year.
Yeah, and then she was devastated when he broke up with her last summer.
I thought she dumped him for Shane Omen.
Okay, irregardless, ex-boyfriends are just off limits to friends. I mean, that's just like the rules of feminism. Don't worry. I'll never tell Regina what you said. It'll be our little secret.
So Katie gets introduced to this clique known as the Plastics, and they are ruling this school. Everything they do becomes popular. They are incredibly mean, hence the name of the film, Mean Girls. But Katie has some friends that want her to infiltrate this group, the Plastics, and she wants her to learn about them so that she can turn things on them and expose them for what they are. And so Katie goes undercover to learn about the Plastics, and while she's doing this, she learns about this book. It is called The Burn Book, and it is a book where the Plastics write down really mean things and mean rumors and thoughts that they have about other people. And in this scene, she's revealing it to her friends who have asked her to spy on the Plastics. Check it out.
Katie, there are two kinds of evil people. People who do evil stuff and people who see evil stuff being done and don't try to stop it.
Does that mean I'm morally obligated to burn that lady's outfit? Oh my God, that's Miss Norberry.
Oh, I love seeing teachers outside of school. It's like seeing a dog walk on its hind legs.
Hey guys, what's up? I didn't know you worked here.
Yeah, moderately priced soaps are my calling.
You shopping?
No, I'm just here with my boyfriend. Joking. Sometimes older people make jokes.
My nana takes her wig off when she's drunk.
Your nana and I have that in common. No, actually, I'm just here because I bartend a couple nights a week down at PJ Calamities. Katie, I hope you do join Mathletes, you know, because we start in a couple weeks, and I would love to have a girl on the team just, you know, so the team could meet a girl.
I think I'm gonna do it.
Great.
You can't join Mathletes, it's social suicide.
Thanks, Damien. Well, this has been sufficiently awkward, and I will see you guys tomorrow.
Bye.
Oh man, that is bleak. So, When are you gonna see Regina again?
I can't spy on her anymore. It's weird.
Come on, she's never gonna find out. It'll be like our little secret.
So lots of people are keeping lots of secrets in Mean Girls, and Katie does go undercover, and she starts to try to pit the Mean Girls, the Plastics, against one another. And when she starts to reveal some of the things that have been said about each other, they turn on one another, and it's amazing how allegiances are broken really quickly when they find out that negative things have been said about themselves. And that sets up our next scene. Check this out.
Gretchen Wieners had cracked.
If you even knew how mean she really is, you know that I'm not allowed to wear hoop earrings, right?
Yeah, 2 years ago she told me that hoop earrings were her thing and that I wasn't allowed to wear them anymore. And then for Hanukkah, my parents got me this pair of really expensive white gold hoops and I had to pretend like I didn't even like them and it was so sad. And you know she cheats on Aaron. Yes, every Thursday he thinks she's doing SAT prep, but really, she's hooking up with Shane Oman in the projection room above the auditorium, and I never told anybody that because I'm such a good friend.
No one in this movie is a good friend. They all have secrets, and they all reveal it, and they're all incredibly mean. And it ends up that Katie ends up getting in a lot of trouble. The burn book ends up getting found out, and she confesses to doing it, and she gets in a whole bunch of trouble, including one of the lies that she spread was about her teacher, who is played by Tina Fey, and she told them that Tina Fey's character was a drug pusher. And so Tina Fey gets in a lot of trouble, and Katie has to rectify all the wrong that she's done, and this is setting up our next scene. Check this out.
When you get bit by a snake, you're supposed to suck the poison out. That's what I had to do. Suck all the poison out of my life. I started with Regina, who is living proof that the more people are scared of you, the more flowers you get. Then there was Miss Norbury, who is living proof that no good deed goes unpunished.
Oh, hi. Did you want to buy some drugs?
I'm just done with my quiz.
Wait, I'll grade it right now. I gotta say, watching the police search my house really was the cherry on top of a fantastic year. How much trouble did you get in for telling the truth?
A lot.
Well, you didn't write that whole book yourself. Did you tell Mr. Duvall who else did it?
No, because I'm trying this new thing where I don't talk about people behind their backs.
That's right. Getting hit by a bus is pretty good punishment.
94.
Welcome back, nerd.
Thanks. Anyway, I'm sorry.
I forgive you. But as my own personal form of punishment, I figured out how you're going to earn that extra credit.
So because she got in trouble, Katie has to earn the extra credit by competing in a math competition. And this sets up where we get the parable from Mean Girls. The parable of Mean Girls really is a story of how mean and how negative people can be. But Katie learns a great lesson, and she shares that lesson with us in this final scene. Check this out.
After 87 minutes of very competitive play, we have a tie. In the event of a tie, we move into a sudden death round. Each team is given the opportunity to choose their opponent. North Shore, who do you select?
The girl, dude. The girl.
Contestant Kraft.
For Marymount, Ms. Carolyn Kraft.
We pick the girl, too.
And from North Shore, Ms. Caddy Heron.
It's Katie. Oh my God, that's me.
Miss Carolyn Kraft seriously needed to pluck her eyebrows. Her outfit looked like it was picked out by a blind Sunday school teacher. And she had some 99-cent lip gloss on her snaggletooth. And that's when I realized, making fun of Carolyn Kraft wouldn't stop her from beating me in this contest.
Contestants, find the limit of this equation.
Calling somebody else fat won't make you any skinnier. Calling someone stupid doesn't make you any smarter. And ruining Regina George's life definitely didn't make me any happier. All you can do in life is try to solve the problem in front of you.
And that is the parable of Mean Girls. The parable of Mean Girls is that people are mean. People are mean, y'all. People are really mean. Like, people are cruel. And I don't know about you, but I hold people that are outside of the church to a different standard. I expect those that don't know Jesus, maybe if you grew up in the church, you would call them lost. I expect lost people to act lost. It's when Christians act lost that there is a problem. And Katie teaches us a valuable lesson in the movie. And the lesson is that negativity doesn't solve anything. Being mean doesn't take care of your problems. Putting someone else down doesn't fix what's going on. It doesn't fix the problem. Calling someone fat doesn't make you thinner. Calling someone dumb doesn't make you smarter. Ruining someone else's life doesn't solve your own problems. And so if you're here today and you are a Christian, we want to learn from the parable of mean girls, because Christians are held to a higher standard. It's okay if you're out of the church. If you want to be mean, be a mean girl, be a mean guy, be whatever you want. But if you're inside the church, you are called to a higher standard. And the higher standard is that you've got to fight against your negativity, the negativity that is inside of you. I love the story. It's an Indian proverb. One evening, an old Cherokee tells his grandson that inside all people, a battle goes on between two wolves. One wolf is negativity, which includes anger, sadness, stress, contempt, disgust, fear, embarrassment, guilt, shame, and hate. The other is positivity, which includes joy, gratitude, serenity, interest, hope, pride, amusement, inspiration, awe, and above all, love. The grandson thinks about this for a minute, and he asks his grandfather, well, which wolf wins? The grandfather says, whichever wolf you feed. And inside all of us is this battle that rages on. It is this battle between being negative or being positive, by going to the flesh, by going what's natural, or obeying the Spirit of God that's inside of you. It's a battle, and whichever spirit you feed is the one that's going to come out in your life the most. Where does negativity come from? Well, I love this breakdown of negativity. Negativity is simply this. It's thinking is a low-level emotional state characterized by fear, seeing scarcity, feeling bad, perceiving threat, being judgmental, blaming and attacking others, confused and scattered thinking, and not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. So why are you mean? Why do you go negative? It's because of these factors, because something inside of you, because you're feeling bad, because you see something as being scarce, because you perceive a threat. You are jealous by someone else's success. You think they're going to do something that you can't do. It is something inside of you, and it is a low-level emotional state. That means it's okay for children to get real negative. But as you grow, you're supposed to mature past this. And there are things that cause you to go negative, and ultimately, the reason you are negative is because of some type of insecurity inside of you. And that negativity, it comes out when you don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. I love this quote by pastor and author Mark Batterson. He says this, more often than not, negativity is externalized insecurity, and insecurity is internalized negativity. What is negativity? Why are you negative? Why are we so mean? Why are we mean towards our friends? Think about it. When you get together with a group of friends and one of your friends is not there, doesn't everyone end up talking about them? Why? Where does that come from? Where does that meanness and negativity come from that we talk about the people that we're supposed to love? It comes from this deep-seated insecurity. And the insecurity comes from some hurt that has happened to you along the way. And if you're here today and you have been hurt, especially if you were hurt as a child and you were hurt in your family, that is that your mom or your dad let you down and had a wound. Maybe they weren't there for you, or maybe they were extra cruel, or maybe they said something to you that caused a wound. If you have a deep-seated wound, your negativity is not something you were born with. It's something that you learn to preserve because you're feeling a threat from within inside. There is something broken with inside of you, and until you fix what's inside of you, you'll never fix the negativity that is spewing on the outside of you. Negativity is simply externalized insecurity, and insecurity is internalized negativity. And today, I want to show you how you can work on your negativity, especially if you're here today and you're a Christian. There's a verse where Paul challenges Christians to not be negative, to not be mean, to not complain, to not argue. And I want to tell you a little bit about Paul. Paul was a missionary that ended up starting a bunch of churches and ended up really helping Christianity take off around the world. And he wrote a letter to one of the churches that he started. It's the letter that we call Philippians because he wrote it to the church in Philippi. And in this letter, it is a positive, it is an incredibly encouraging letter, but there were two people in the church that were negative, that were fighting against one another. And Paul challenges that negativity that is happening with inside the church, and he challenges them to do something, to work on something. And if you're here today, what he challenged Christians to do some 2,000 years ago is the same thing that we need to apply to our lives. Look at what Paul says. We're going to read the whole thing, and then we'll break it down. And you can follow along in YouVersion, or it'll come up on the screen. Paul writes, "Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. Do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. And then I will be able to boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor in vain." So Paul writes this letter, and in this section, he starts off by saying, "Therefore." And if you've been around Next Level for any amount of time, you've probably heard me say this. In the Bible, when you see the words "therefore," what should you ask yourself? What's it there for? Because Paul is building upon something. And what he has just told us is building upon the fact that he has told Christians that we are to consider other people better than ourselves. That we are to look at other people and put their needs ahead of our own. And the only reason we do that is because Jesus put our needs ahead of his. Jesus left the perfection of heaven, came down and became a human on earth, and then died. He put our needs ahead of his own. And he rose again, and because we have a relationship with him, we are to consider Jesus and to put other people ahead of ourselves. Therefore, let's keep reading. "Therefore, now that we understand that, my dear friends," he's writing to people he cares about. He says, "as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence." Paul is in prison when he writes this, so he's not with them anymore. He says, "continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose." So what is Paul saying? Well, before Paul gets to the negative part, he challenges Christians to work out their salvation. Now, this is an interesting concept, and this is something that a lot of Christians mess up and a lot of Christians get wrong. When you become a Christian, we call it you're saved, or that's your salvation. And when you are saved, we believe that you're always saved, that you can't do anything to lose your salvation. You are saved. And you're not saved based off of your works. That Jesus didn't say, okay, you can go to heaven because you went to church or because you said a prayer or because you're a pretty good person. The only reason we go to heaven, the only reason we have access to God is because Jesus died for us and his blood covered our sin. So when you are saved, you're saved, and there's nothing you can do to change what God thinks about you. God loves you, period. You can't make God love you any more than he does, and you can't make God love you any less. God loves you, so you're saved, okay? But Paul then gives us this challenge, and he says, okay, since you're saved, you need to work out your salvation. Now, this is interesting. Because oftentimes in the church world, we think that, okay, if I do good works, that makes God love me more. It doesn't make God love you anymore. He can't show you that he loves you any more than he did by sending his son to die for you. God loves you. But because you are saved, because you have salvation inside of you, it is up to you to work on your salvation. And when you work on your salvation, it doesn't make God love you more. It doesn't mean God's going to give you a favor, but it does mean that you grow. And your growth is up to you. You have salvation just like you have a brain. And if you don't use your brain, it goes to mush. You have salvation just like you have a body. And if you don't put physical exercise to your body, you don't lose your body. You gain more body. Right? Exercise, though, is what gets your body in function. It's what creates yourself in a healthy manner. And working out your salvation doesn't mean that you gain salvation. No, you already have it, but it's up to you to work out your salvation. You've got to do some things. You've got to put some things into practice if you want to experience the presence of God. Why? Because it is the Jesus inside of you that allows you to overcome things like negativity. You cannot do it on your own. We are too wounded. We are too hurt. We have been hurt by too many people to just strap up our bootstraps and say, okay, that's it. I'm going to overcome negativity. You can't do it. But you can do it when you work out your salvation. When you pour into your relationship with God, When you say, I'm going to start off my day, every single day, working out my salvation, what are some ways you can do that? Well, start off by praying. What if you started off every day by praying? Someone that you're really negative towards, someone that you don't like, someone that you're not looking forward to being around, what if you prayed for them when you started off your day? You know what Jesus said to do with our enemies? He said to pray for them. What if you started off your day with that? That's working out your salvation. What's working out your salvation? Well, try this. How about reading the Bible in the morning before you get going on your day and just saying, hey, I'm gonna flex my spirituality a little bit. I'm going to stretch out. I'm going to do something by reading the Bible and allowing myself to get some spiritual exercise so that I, when I'm tempted with things like going negative, when I'm tempted with things that I don't want to do, I can actually battle against it because of Jesus' Spirit, which lives inside of me. Therefore, my dear friends, as you've always obeyed, not only my presence, but now much more my absence, continue to work out your salvation. Now, once he's built that upon it, once he said that we are to work out our salvation, he then gives us the challenge, and this is the anti-mean girls challenge. This is the challenge for us to do something different, that if you're inside the church, you can't be a mean girl, you can't be a mean guy. You have to work harder. Why? Because you have the Spirit of God living inside of you. Look at what Paul says. He says, do everything without grumbling or arguing. Some translations say complaining. Do everything without complaining, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Do everything without being negative. Do everything without complaining. Do everything without being mean. Now, does this mean that you can never have a constructive criticism? No. Does this mean that you always have to smile when things go your way? No, there are times when you have to have hard conversations. But you can tell someone the truth and not be mean about it. And you can confront someone in love and not be mean about it. This is not talking about having honest conversations where we really care about someone and we're saying, hey, for the good of our relationship, I need you to work on this, or I'll work with you on this, or this is what's going on here. This is hurting. This is damaging us. I'm willing to work. This is not what Paul's talking about. What Paul's talking about is people within the church who are gossiping about one another, people inside the church who are going negative on each other inside the church. That's what Paul's talking about. And Paul says, do everything without going negative. Do everything. That means, Christian, do everything. Go to work without complaining. That means, Christian, be in your marriage without complaining. Just try this. Just try this. If you're a wife, instead of complaining and harping about your husband and his faults and failures, just try spending some time encouraging him. He'll walk around singing that he's got a cheerleader. I'm telling you. He will. It'll change his life. You, though, are the only one that can control the negativity that's coming inside of you. And if you feed into it, if you don't work out your salvation, it's going to come out. And when it comes out, it never solves a problem. Negativity never solves a problem. Why? Because we don't go negative to the people that can actually do something about it. We go negative to other people so that they can justify our feelings. If you're mad at your boss, you don't go to your boss. You go to another employee and you complain about your boss. That employee can't change your boss, but you're going negative about them. If you're frustrated with a friendship and you go negative on a friend to another friend, that friend's not going to solve the problem. The only way you can solve the problem is by solving the problem that's in front of you and dealing with it exactly. But negativity is a cancer. Negativity breeds negativity, and negativity is going behind people's backs and spreading things and saying things and bashing on people. And negativity is as serious of a sin as any sin there is. And if you're a Christian, you are held to a higher standard. And Paul is challenging us to do everything without grumbling or arguing. Do everything. Now, this is why. This is the reason why this is so important. I want to read to you how he ends this section. We're going to read about the complaining again. He says, do everything without grumbling or arguing so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. This is the key part. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. And then I will be able to boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor in vain. Why is it so important for Christians to not be mean? Why is it so important for Christians to not go negative against one another? It's important because if we are fighting with one another, why would anyone that doesn't know Jesus want to have what we have? They can already get negativity everywhere else they go. We should be offering the world something unique. And that uniqueness comes in a relationship with Jesus. And Jesus is so powerful that he transforms not just your soul, he transforms everything about you. And when you work out your salvation, you start living as an example around other people, and other people are going to think you're weird. Everyone talks about everyone. That's just what our culture does. Everyone is negative. You stop being negative, you will be weird. But eventually people will come to you and ask you what's going on in your life. Because the people that are negative, it's because there's something negative inside of them. Hurt people hurt other people. If you're not hurting, you have no reason to hurt someone else. And so if you are constantly being negative about other people, it's not other people. Other people aren't the issue. It's you, that there is some hurt inside of you that you need to deal with. And that comes from working out your salvation, from finding some forgiveness, from finding grace, and allowing Jesus to transform you from the inside. There is a doctor who has done multiple TED Talks, and she's written multiple books, and she's kind of become the top expert on negativity. And I don't know if she's a believer or not. I don't know if she's a Christian or not, but her work is incredible. Her work is very insightful. Her name is Dr. Fredrickson, and this is what she had to write. She says, "In our wish to defend against threat and loss in life, we tend to prioritize bad over good. While this is a tidy survival mechanism for someone who needs to stay hypervigilant in a dangerous environment, the truth is that for most of us, this negativity bias means that we spend time ruminating, that's a big word, over the minor frustrations we experience, bad traffic, a disagreement with a loved one, and ignoring the minor chances we have to experience wonder, awe, and gratitude throughout the day." What is she saying? Well, she's saying that we have a negativity bias inside of us. Translation, we're broken, that there's something inside of us that focuses on the negative, and if you don't do something to push against the negative, what you'll do is you'll miss the amazing things that God is doing all around you because you're focused on stupid things like being stuck in traffic. Our negativity bias focuses on things that aren't even relevant to our real situations, and everyone goes negative because everyone is focused on the negativity bias. But I love what Dr. Fredrickson says, because she says that there are two things that you can do to fight against your negativity. That if you're here today and you'd say, "Well, I'm just born that way. I'm just naturally negative." No, you weren't. You're negative because you've been wounded, and your negativity is coming outside of a wound. And if you're negative today, there are some things that you can do. I don't know if she's a Christian or not, but her answer blew me away because it is so Christian. This is what she is the expert, and I love when science aligns itself with the Bible. She is the expert right now currently on negativity, and she says there are two things that you can do to fight against being a negative person. Number one is forgiveness. I love that. Forgiveness. Negativity is not just a reaction because someone did something you don't like. Negativity is a response because something is wrong inside of you. And the only way to get rid of this negativity is to forgive ultimately the people who have wounded you along the way. And when you forgive them, you watch yourself as you start to let go of the negativity that is inside of you. She says this, "The attitude of forgiveness, fully accepting that a negative circumstance has occurred and relinquishing negative feelings surrounding the event, can be learned and can lead us to experience better mental, emotional, and physical health. The Stanford Forgiveness Project trained 260 adults in forgiveness in a 6-week course." And this is what they learn. In a 6-week course, they help teach people how to forgive. And in 6 weeks, they learned that 70% reported a decrease in their feelings of hurt. 13% experienced reduced anger. And 27% experienced fewer physical complaints. For example, pain, gastrointestinal upset, dizziness, etc. Some of you, your body is turning on yourself because you are negative. And when you are negative, your body reacts negatively. When you are negative, it can actually cause heart disease. It can cause all sorts of brain issues. It can cause dizziness. Some of you have got constipation because you're negative. That's what she said. I didn't say it. That's what she said. She said, "The practice of forgiveness has also been linked to better immune function and a longer lifespan. Other studies have shown that forgiveness has more than just a metaphorical effect on the heart. It can actually lower our blood pressure and improve cardiovascular health as well." So the reason that you are negative is because there's a forgiveness issue inside of you. And when you work on forgiving those that have hurt you, you are then able to stop being so negative. But the only way you can forgive those that have hurt you is if you start to work out your salvation and allow Jesus inside of you to give you the strength to do what is impossible. She gives a second reason, though, and the second reason is, or the second way to fight against negativity is gratitude. Gratitude. This is amazing. I don't know if this lady's a Christian or not, but according to science, according to her research, the two things that you can do to fight against your negativity is forgiveness and gratitude. That sounds like it's coming from Paul. Paul talks about forgiveness and gratitude over and over again. And look at what she says about gratitude. Gratitude is acknowledging the good aspects of life and giving thanks have a powerful impact on emotional well-being. In a landmark study, people who were asked to count their blessings felt happier, exercised more. Maybe the reason you're not exercising is because you're not grateful. I don't know. They had fewer physical complaints. They slept better than those who created lists or hassles. Brené Brown has found that there is a relationship between joy and gratitude, but with a surprising twist. It is not joy that makes us grateful, but gratitude that makes us joyful. Everyone's seeking joy. Everyone's seeking to be happy. The way to get that is to be thankful. And if you're here today and you struggle with negativity, which I won't have you raise your hand, but I'm guaranteeing it's every single one of us in here. We go negative on people. When someone doesn't do something that we want them to do, when our kids don't obey, when we disagree with someone at work, when our boss is grumpy, we go negative and we talk junk about other people. And we do that within the church. And we complain and we argue within the church and we bash other Christians and we bash people that are supposed to be our friends and we talk smack about the pastor. And negativity breeds negativity. It is a cancer that will destroy something from within. And Paul says that we've got to fight against this negativity. And the way that you can do that is simply by forgiving and showing some gratitude. So here's the application for today. It's simply this. The next time you're tempted to go negative, forgive the person who offended you, and then immediately think about five things you're grateful for. The next time you're tempted to go negative, the next time you're tempted to complain about your boss to someone behind his back or her back, the next time you're tempted to complain about your spouse to your mom, the next time you're tempted to complain about someone and go negative, I want you to forgive the person that hurt you right then and there. I forgive them for giving me this dumb assignment that is pointless. I forgive them for hurting my feelings. I forgive them. And then immediately think about five things you are grateful for. I'm so thankful I have a job. I'm so thankful I have a spouse. I'm so thankful I have breath in my lungs. I'm going to fight against this negativity. Why? Because negativity is a sign that there's something broken from within. And you have every right to walk around this world and be a mean girl or a mean guy. But if you're a Christian, you're called to a higher standard. And Paul says, do everything without complaining or arguing. Do everything without being negative. Why? So that you can shine bright in a universe that is dark and is complaining and is negative. And Christian, you cannot shine when you're being negative with one another. And so you've got to work out your salvation. So it's a practical application for you. The question is, will you do it this week? Will you guys pray with me? God, thank you so much for this day, and thank you for a chance to just look at a silly film called Mean Girls. We ask, God, that you would just take what we've learned today and that, God, you would challenge our hearts, that we would be a people who would rise to a higher standard, that we wouldn't let our feelings being hurt or the hurt inside of us to spew out to hurt other people. That, God, we would be a people who is marked by generosity and grace and thankfulness. And God, I just ask that you would stir something deep within inside of us, that we would work out our salvation so that we could change the world. We ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.